As Emma's gonna read stuff I've put together over the last 2 weeks. Actually, I wrote it years ago, but in a different form. Assuming she can read my writing over the last 2 weeks.
Okay.
Okay, let's see if you can read any of that.
See if I can read any of this. You guys ready?
We're ready.
All right, here we go. Sentience, the abiding way. Personal and universal knowledge of abiding enhances you remarkably. And
experiencing abiding is available to you today.
In fact, attaining and passage on this knowledge and way of life is the meaning and purpose of your coming alive.
Coming alive.
And it's, yeah, this is going to be interesting, guys.
Dissemination.
Dissemination and application in life's finest achievement, and sentience is your guide. Long ago, and far, far away, and even in distant lands on Earth, not so far away, there were places where people believed all things are divine, and physical is merely an illuminated form of spiritual, and
all of individuals are divine.
Divine in their own authority. And people were taught not to do anything they did not want others or the world to do to them. And as a reminder of this authority, each person was given a God as an inspiration, so that as children learn about this authority and regenerate their mortal body and self to abiding, ! As they truly desired that to be, which also regenerated their memories and ways. Many centuries later, the ways of the ancient people were...
Let me see it.
Maybe you should read this. Right there.
The ways of the ancient people were memoried and briefly brought to life again, as described in Judges 21, verse 25. In that verse 25, it says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. But this quickly deteriorated to be replaced by authority of God. Your life today is not really about spiritualizing the physical world, discovering God, or becoming one with God, nor is it about bringing God alive in the world today. The universe is so binary that it is as it is and simultaneously is as you and all others are as well. In this, you can continue living the perishable body and self that was loaned to you as a come-alive gift, and struggle eternally to become who you truly desire being. Or, since your loner body self and life enables you to participate in life, to know and experience yourself in life, you can regenerate or rebirth yourself as you truly desire. The question is, are you willing to regenerate your loner body self to abiding and be and live as an abiding being? You are abiding, but you don't seem interested in living your personal authority as an abiding being. The question is, why do you suppose that is? Is it possible you would rather live your hopes and dreams and intentions of becoming abiding than live as an abiding being and maybe discover you're not as extraordinary as you hoped and dreamed, or find you are not all wise and as happy as you desire being, nor as fulfilled? Are your dreams and intentions better than the truth of yourself? In ancient times, in abiding communities, everyone regenerated themselves as abiding, such that after a few generations, no matter what self and life you were born with, or whether or not you regenerated your abiding self and life, you were already an abiding being. But that's not true today. Now you must regenerate your loner body self from non-abiding parents to abiding, if that is what you truly desire, and not regenerate loner body self to the self and life you believe you are living. It's like the man who dreamed he was a butterfly, and after awakening could not be certain if he was a man dreaming he was a butterfly or whether he was a butterfly dreaming he was a man. Can you really say with any degree of certainty whether you are a spiritual being or a physical being? Whether you are living a body self that is naturally you, or whether you are living a loner self and call it you? Believe it or not, a spiritual life, like a dream, is only real for you. No other person can be involved. And the same is true of the inner life of a loner being. Okay, now I'm going to read from a manuscript that was discovered a long time ago. In fact, it was in the 1920s. It's a manuscript that was used to instruct children and young adults in the ways of abiding. And it was given to those who came to abiding communities seeking knowledge. It was a way in which everyone followed the same manuscript or understood according to the same manuscript. The manuscript is titled Abiding Beliefs, Principles, and Ways. Now, this is from the manuscript. The concept, oh, by the way, the translation is made to accommodate today's form and structure of language.
Can you repeat the title? Abiding Beliefs and?
Principles and Ways.
Thank you.
You see, even in those days, everybody had their own damned opinion. It's like somebody told me yesterday, abiding doesn't matter. The only thing that's important is eternal. And I say to you, eternal doesn't matter. The only thing that is important is abiding. Because abiding is a way of life. And the main principle of abiding is living by your own authority. So this manuscript begins with the concept of authority of man arose in abiding communities because we have no gods to despoil us. We honor abiding individuals who were exalted or revered as supremely good or just. Of course, this was an era or way of life that existed centuries ago. The authority of man does not mean the authority of some man, of some men. It is about the authority of every man and woman, for all people are deities in this life. Therefore, to truly understand and live as the authority of man, as an abiding being, you must realize all of your doings, for believe it or not, you are not at the center of your doings. You are an abiding being outside of your doings doing. But believing you are at the center of your doings constantly discontents you about what is happening in your life. You have the authority to live as you truly desire. And the universe gives that to you. God does not. No matter what you are doing, you are only doing your beliefs. God and holiness do not exist as a fundamental nature of the universe or of each person. You have to create God and holiness for yourself. And you must create your abidingness as well. I think I got the pages mixed up. As you regenerate your body to truly be as you desire being, you also regenerate your memories and ways. This is instructions in the manuscript. Many centuries later, those ancient people were memoried and briefly brought to life again. Oh, I already said that, didn't I?
No.
Yeah, I got it out of order.
No, you haven't said that.
Was described in the Judges 21, verse 25. In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. But this quickly deteriorated to be replaced by the authority of God. So then it goes into asking, as I said, you are already abiding, but you do not seem to want to be an abiding being. Is it possible that you would rather live your old dreams and hopes and intentions of becoming abiding than live as an abiding being and maybe discover you're not as? It extraordinary as you hope to be. Isn't that true? Patrick, I'll ask you that question.
It's absolutely true.
And you're a little bit afraid. You have the image of becoming all wise and all knowing and having all abilities to overcome all things. That is your hope and intention and dream. And you're concerned that if you ever lived as an abiding being, that would not be true. You'd be less than that or other than that.
That's occurred to me over this past week or so, Roger, yes.
You want to describe that?
Well, there, when I was growing up, quite early on, I saw that the Catholic religion that I was brought up with had all these extraordinary people who, in the Bible and in the biblical tradition, that could do extraordinary things. And I wanted to be like that. And as we've progressed along with talking about eternal and now abiding, I began to see that that wasn't necessarily going to happen with me, that abiding didn't necessarily include anything like these extraordinary people who could do extraordinary things and live their lives and, of course, be very happy because they were so extraordinary. And it's been a bit of a leap to begin to understand that it's perhaps quite all right to rather be abiding rather than extraordinary. But it's just the kind of thought that I've been going through recently.
If you died and were resurrected, what is the self and identity you would be resurrected to, do you know?
Funny you should ask. Been thinking about that a whole bunch. I've come to the realization or conclusion that should I resurrect, or in the terminology I've been using, should I recur, I would recur according to the same pattern that I have been living. And since that's perhaps the pattern of my loner body, then that is what will resurrect or recur.
So unless you give yourself an eternal or an abiding identity, it is possible that resurrecting would not be enjoyable at all or desirable.
That's absolutely correct, sir. Absolutely correct.
So whether we talk about these things or face these issues, they all seem to be underneath everything we do. And that therefore you're carrying an image that eventually you could become that great and grand abiding image. But if you did it now, you might not. Is that correct?
Yeah, if I did it now, it might not at all be what I thought it would be. Yep.
Or what you wanted it to be.
Yeah.
So, when I said that your eternal soul is your eternal identity, and everybody kind of booed at that, do you understand the importance of that?
Well, that Well, I'm still in a position where not entirely sure I need the concept of soul, but what I can say that I've come to appreciate that I am in fact a pattern that I am actioning. And you asked me many, many months ago, would I be all right with knowing that I was a pattern? And at that time, I didn't know what the hell you were talking about. I think I do now.
You give yourself an identity.
Yep, I give myself an identity, and then I live that.
Is the pattern the identity?
Haven't you created isn't the pattern of your life the identity of you? We can say, oh yeah, there goes Jennifer. And I can talk all about that. But in talking about Jennifer, there goes Jennifer, I'm only talking about the pattern of the things you have done. The consistent pattern of those things then gives you an identity. Do you understand that, Patrick?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Therefore, if you want an eternal identity, you must create a pattern of eternal activities in order to have an eternal identity. And I know you didn't like the term soul. I'm telling you, goddammit, just use the word soul as a synonym for the word eternal identity.
Okay, I'll do that.
And stop bitching about the word. So you, then, when we talk about creating and developing your eternal soul, we're really talking about creating and developing your eternal identity.
Absolutely.
Or abiding identity, either case.
Yeah, earlier in this conversation, you said that you talked to someone who said that eternal was everything and abiding, and then you said, no, abiding is everything. I don't know what that other person was referring to, but do you...
I probably misquoted that individual because we didn't discuss it. In which case, then, I'm sorry for having misquoted him. But it's very common. The reason is, when we first started and you are living your loner body, abiding doesn't have any meaning. Eternal is the only thing that has any meaning. So when I started this conversation, I started referring to you as personal and eternal. As we got involved further, the assumption being that you had gotten beyond your loner being, your loner body, I could talk about personal and abiding, and that made sense. Abiding makes no sense to the average loner being because it's not part of the Bible teaching the way it is presented. Only eternal has significance. But let's assume that you are given eternal life with God. You have no idea, no concept of what that might be.
That's correct.
What we're talking about is you deciding what your resurrected life, or as presented by religion, would be all about. Give it an identity. let's assume for a minute, everybody thinks this is so damn complicated, but let's assume for a minute, Patrick, that you are as an abiding being, had an eternal identity, which is the pattern of an emprise you have been living. Would you need anything else?
No, not a thing. Not a bloody thing.
So all I've been trying to get people to understand is that it's that simple, and it comes out in the manuscript later on, that as an abiding being, all you need is an emprise that enables you to generate and, of course, an emprise is in a latter-day word not matched with the original in the manuscript. But an emprise, as I have said before, is an action or a doing. That cannot be completed in a lifetime. And in that, and in doing that, then could you not expect to experience yourself as eternal?
Most definitely.
And in doing that, then you are creating an eternal identity that you'd be willing to be and live eternally. And that alone, then, is the whole foundation of living abidingly. If you, as a loner being, find it is important to be eternal. My question, to be eternal, eternally what? You can't answer that question.
Well, in the absence of an emprise, there is no answer to that question.
Is it possible that Karen is now creating in just remodeling that house, is she creating, is it possible she is creating an emprise for herself?
That's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. You know, there's another question. And that is, how do I feel about that?
Okay. To piss you off?
I think it's absolutely marvelous that Karen is so...
And pisses you off.
quit taking my lines away from me, Roger.
I'm asking you.
It pisses me off that I don't have the same...
That's right.
Commitment to an emprise.
Without a commitment to an emprise, can't be even certain that you want to resurrect or continue in life, because you don't know what it is you might continue as. And therefore, you'd rather continue living a loner self with big hopes and expectations and dreams than ever challenge those hopes and dreams and discover that you are might be other than what you desire, right?
That's right. That's right.
So what do you have to say about that?
Well, it's about, I think what I have to say about that is about time that I got on with my own and stopped living this being swept up in Karen's emprise and not being all that happy about it. I far better getting on with my own. Because you're right, in the absence of that, then I have a pretty damn clear idea of what will recur. And that's not exactly a rosy prospect.
What if that answer is self-defeating? How might that answer be self-defeating? Let's put it that way.
Let's see. Well, that was a whole bunch of what I don't want in that answer. And I think in that itself, about a bunch of stuff I don't want, would certainly be self-defeating.
How would it be self-defeating? How could it be? Remember, right now, your answers are helping other people choose and live an emprise.
Okay, so can you repeat that, because there was some kind of breakup in the system and I didn't hear
the breakup in me.
Of this sequence.
I said right now in our conversation, the assumption is you are helping people discover and live an emprise.
Okay, yep.
What might that show you?
Well, the last couple of weeks, at least, my focus has been on showing people to their abidingness and how they might get around to experiencing it. And I've seen a thread now that I can look back over the last 20 years of our conversations and gatherings, and it all ties together in a very, very nice, simple package that is so easy to tell other people about now. Sometimes the challenge is where to begin with people who haven't been around for 20 years. But it's such a simple package that is possible to talk about and show to others. And I find that as I am showing it to others, I'm showing it to myself. And it gets clearer and clearer with each time that I show others. It gets clearer and clearer to me, and I experience more and more of myself as something other than simple identity as a loner self. There's something much more to myself now than the simple loner being reacting just like a chicken.
Is it possible that discovering and living an emprise is as simple as just being self-aware of what you're doing, the pattern of your doings?
Yeah, and that I've been thinking about that too, and that over time, how I have made a living and what I've done for my newspaper work and everything else is I always wanted to show people how things worked, and that whether it was showing people how government worked and how they could work with government, my political columns were trying to show people how politics works, and so that the pattern of my doings has been that I wanted to show people how things work, but it has been confined to how things work in the loner body world. But that's what I've been doing. I've been wanting to show people that they could figure out how things work and make how things work for them.
But I think we said, and I think I would agree, that you were a little pissed off that you were involved in Karen's emprise and not living your own. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
What if that's not true? Does that make sense?
No, I'm not sure what you'd be talking about then. How would it not be true?
What if your emprise is showing others to their emprise and helping them be and live their emprise? If that would piss you off or disturb you in any way, you would stop doing that. And yet maybe the pattern of doing that is your emprise itself.
So, if I understood you correctly, that you're saying that maybe my emprise is showing people to
their
and
emprise.
Supporting others in living their emprise.
That living that emprise is so subtle and so easy, because we expect it to be something extraordinary. It could be as simple as helping Karen remodel a house, which is, by the way, in a dream, remodel herself in life so she can actively pursue her emprise. What if that's true with everybody, that their emprise is as simple as that? Doesn't that bring everything together?
It does. It really, really does.
We think emprise and eternal life is supposed to be something extraordinary and unusual and big and grandiose. What if it's just as simple as that?
That's really, really neat, because in conversations that I've had with our Thursday night group, that when we're talking about with Terry or with Leah or with Eric, that the emprise can seem so ordinary.
Yeah.
It's certainly not grand and grandiose, and it's been a bit of a puzzle to me, because I've been looking for those things that I can help them see that is bigger and grander than what seems to be going on. And you're absolutely correct.
Remember when I said, wouldn't it be grand to be able to paint like Michelangelo? It's grand and extraordinary when you can't do it. But only thing Michelangelo could think about coming down off of the scaffolding and there, the Sistine Chapel is done. The only thing he could think of was, oh, my aching back.
Yeah. What I got to go soak in a Roman bath.
What you can do is ordinary to you. What you cannot do seems extraordinary. We're not looking for something that is extraordinary that you cannot do. What we're looking for is something that you can do, which is so naturally and ordinarily you that to you it won't seem extraordinary from the inside.
You know, I can pause and think about Karen in these current circumstances, and that's, I look at her and I think she's engaged in some extraordinary things. And I haven't asked her about how ordinary and natural it seems for her.
Then isn't that the basis of what she's primarily the basis of what she is trying to do?
I think so.
Is to show each individual to that part that is so naturally them that it doesn't even seem extreme or extraordinary or extra of anything.
Well, Karen often talks about opening doors or showing people two things that helping them see things about themselves that they don't see themselves. Uh-huh.
Then do you see the importance of, in the manuscript where they said, you are not at the center of your doings. You are outside of your doings doing.
You know, that's a really, really important distinction. I'm not sure I grasp it all yet. Let's talk about it a bit. So if I'm my doings, then I'm not the doer that's doing.
Well, we all think we are at the center of our doings. What I do is what I do. That's me. What if you are not at the center of your doings? What if you are outside of your doings doing?
Yeah.
In the same way, would it be extraordinary to paint like Michelangelo? Or would it be extraordinary to show Michelangelo how to paint like Michelangelo? Which would you rather do?
Goodness gracious, yes. When you put it that way, that's rather marvelous. And do I necessarily, in that illustration, show Michelangelo how to paint that way, or show them that he can and will, or can paint that way?
Yeah.
Okay.
That he can show it to what is natural to him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, then, your extraordinariness is in doing that. That is not extraordinary because it's natural to you. but seen from the outside is extraordinary. Does this make sense to anybody on the black box?
Maybe it's just us two now, hey?
What?
Did everybody else fall asleep?
No.
Sounds like it.
But does it make sense?
I know there's more people on the black box than Simone.
Yeah, there was a lot of dinging earlier on.
That's right.
Hi, Angela's here.
Hi, Angela. Hey.
Does it make sense to you?
Hey, it's Sharon. Sharon. Say hello.
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 Hey, this is Sharon.
Hey, Sharon.
Andrew's got stuffing the phone down my throat. I'm at Sharon's house. We just made dinner because she's leaving tomorrow.
So does it make sense to you guys?
Yes. It's wonderfully clear. Wonderfully clear. Can't wait to come and talk more about it.
Is it possible that living as an abiding being is that clear and that simple? That we've complicated, that you complicate it by the minute you say that it kind of pisses you off that you're helping, that Karen's doing, or and you're helping her, but you're not doing your own emprise. That complicates things because you don't realize that your emprise is just as likely to be helping others do or discover their own emprise. And it will not necessarily be extraordinary.
In my view.
That if you look for something extraordinary in that, then you're gone astray itself.
Especially if you're looking for the feeling of extraordinary.
No, I think that actually the off-pissedness comes from something I'm familiar with now that I think about it, and that's the struggle between what I think is the imperatives of the loner body existence, and that carving out time to do loner body, get the coin of the realm to pay Peter, the blah blah blah, to get those things are important and shall not be set aside, and that they should take priority, da 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 da. I fall into that struggle, that's for sure.
But all I ever said is, can't you do those things in an abiding or eternal way?
Yeah. Yes, you have said that very clearly. I forget that often.
And what does that look like?
Well, it looks like setting aside making contact with a client when I know it's due and required in order to stay engaged with helping Karen.
It means what?
In order to stay engaged with helping Karen.
I don't think I understand.
Well, let's say that I need to make a telephone call within a certain time period, but Karen is requiring and has asked for my help and assistance in getting things done, and I find myself past the time when that telephone call should have been made to a client.
But don't you see how making that telephone call in a timely manner is allowing you guys to do the abiding?
Can you say that again?
In other words, getting the money and the clients and everything else to pay Caesar is the thing that allows you to do the abiding. So in doing that, you're actually doing the abiding.
Ah. I could have just as easily then said, Karen, I got to take 10 minutes, 15 minutes max. I got to make this phone call.
Of course.
And I neglected to do that.
Okay. And then you hold that against her because you feel like, well, I had to be there to do da-da-da-da-da-da.
That's right.
You have to do you. And if making that phone call is doing you, then she would absolutely honor that, I would believe.
Oh, you're right. She wouldn't quarrel with that at all.
But we always make things so much more complicated.
I complicate things just a little bit extra titch too, that when I get hungry, I get owly, and I don't plan for that properly.
If that comes up and surprises you, then you're not living abiding. If you get surprises in life, then you're not paying attention. You're not doing abiding.
So it surprises me because I haven't accounted for it. Is it that simple?
Well, you haven't paid attention to your own life.
Ah. Okay. Yeah.
Here's a question.
Yes, sir.
Ask Karen. In doing dressage, are you becoming one with the horse, or is the horse becoming one with you?
That's a good question. I think the horse is becoming one with you. Me.
Is it possible that that's the same thing with abiding? It is that not that you are becoming one with the universe or the world around you, but that it is becoming one with you.
Yep. So I'm the one with the idea.
Or the concept of abiding.
Yep.
So we could have said that at one time, dressage was an emprise. An emprise you could have taken on and dealt with in that way. Is that correct?
Can you say that again, please?
Then we could have said at 1998-99 that dressage in becoming the horse becoming one with you is as much an emprise as you are being and living today.
Sure.
And and that you are showing the students you were teaching, you were showing them how to show the horse how to become one with you.
Yep.
And that in what you're doing at the house and what you're teaching today is the same thing. You're not teaching then how each individual should get in harmony or become one with the universe or the events around them, but how the universe is in harmony with them.
Right, yep.
That they have the authority.
Yes, absolutely.
An enterprise can be that simple and that subtle and change, and yet that knowing, and change your life accordingly. If you are an abiding being and you know and understand your empires, what else do you need? Anything?
No, not at all.
So I got a question. So then, Karen hasn't become one with her new clinic arrangement. She's been engaging in making or having that clinic arrangement become one with her. Would that be true?
But I'm speaking more of the people who come to the, what she offers in that clinic arrangement to people who come there.
Okay, but I'm thinking that as the now the analogy of Karen having the horse when she was doing dressage become one with her, she is having the environment within which she operates become one with her.
Isn't that true?
That is true, yes.
But we don't think that's true. We think the world has been here longer than we have, and so we have to get in harmony with the world.
Mm-hmm. I could tell you, with watching Karen pull this clinic together, I think, if you're waiting for her to get in tune with you, forget it. She's going to bring her world in tune, or yeah, in tune with her.
Well, what does that mean relative to a client?
I better not speak on Karen's behalf.
Well, one of you two speak.
Somebody say something.
What's the question?
He's talking all about you and the clinic itself.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, how does that relate to you and your clients? not just getting the clinic one with you, but what is the process then that reveals about you and your clinic, you and your clients?
It's the same pattern, is it not?
Okay, that's an answer that says nothing. Do you want to answer the question?
So, I don't know. I can't gather my thoughts.
When you were teaching dressage, did you teach people how to become one with the horse, or teach them how to bring the horse in oneness with them?
Yep, it would be bring the horse to be one with them.
Okay, then in a healing situation, would it be any different?
So teaching the patient that their body is one with them.
Are they supposed to get in one with the body, or bring the body in one with them?
The second, that their body becomes one with them.
How about their universe? How about their world? How about their relationship?
Be the same thing.
But doesn't that sound like it's against everything we've ever been taught?
Probably. I try not to pay much attention to everything we've ever been taught.
Yeah, but how do you respond to that? How can you help people with relationship problems, teach them to get their husband in harmony with them rather than they getting in harmony with their husband?
Perhaps it starts with teaching them that their body can be one with them.
What does that mean? To you?
I guess for starters, it could be showing them that their body is I don't know. I was going to say the outpicturings of their body.
What about the outpicturings of their
back
body?
Back to the description area, that their body is an outpicturing. It's sort of like an illustration of what they're living. So we're back into loner body stuff.
Is this boring everybody? I'm asking the people around the table here.
Nope.
Nope. Fascinating.
No boredom.
Keep going.
So showing a patient that they can be, that their body is one with them, like if their body can reveal their struggles or reveal their finest assets, I guess, is the start of showing them that their relationship can be one with them or their job can be one with them.
I'm using this illustration, or maybe I'm abusing it, because in showing the horse coming being in one with you puts the authority in your hands, which seems absolutely true in dressage. You have the authority.
Yeah, well, you have the authority in all of your activities, don't you?
Most people don't think so.
I think people would like to think so, or I think they're searching for that authority. I think people are getting tired of the New Age thing, and they know that there's another way to see it. They're just not sure what it is. And when you give them the authority, I think they get really excited.
But there are also those that get very frightened by that. By their own power. Yep. In other words, it's up to them.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't work, the consequences are theirs.
Yeah, there is no one else to blame. If the authority is in my hands. No.
So, Simone, how would you think of approaching this with children?
I give them as much authority as I can.
If you give them as much authority as you can, then you are the authority. You dole it out.
So
in doing that, then you maintain your own authority in the classroom.
Right.
And they don't have any authority, technically.
I think I was speaking from the view of the system. I have to take me back and give all authority to themselves. Though.
Sharon, would you agree with that?
Say it again, Simone. I said I have to take myself back and give the authority over to the children.
Do you mean give your authority over to the children?
No, not mine.
Oh, you're showing the children to their authority.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But my part could be to to guide them
Yeah. Yep.
Suppose that I completely disagree.
Okay.
Instead of giving them authority, show them how authority is taken away from them, or how they give it away, either case.
I don't see that.
All of life, everything we've ever been taught about healing, takes authority away from you.
Healing, do you mean repairing or?
Whatever, ask Karen.
Takes the authority away from you? If I heal somebody, I take the authority away from them, yes.
Sure. Then I do it for them. But when I guide them to that they have the authority to heal themselves, that's not the same.
Even that's a little bit mixed up. Does anybody understand how subtle and complex this is? And yet, when you really get cut through it all, it becomes very, very, very simple. Once you understand it.
Am I wrong?
What?
It sounds right to me. I'm thinking that there's something, like Roger said, something subtle that he hears that we don't.
Is the language maybe false that I am using?
No. Is it what we mean by healing?
Well, if I may. What I heard him say was, show people how they're blocking their authority or diminishing their authority or giving it away. Because in that approach, you really don't even have to talk about them getting or realizing or having their authority. It's a given. It's already there. The only question is how they're diminishing it. Because the way I think that you're going at it to try and, I don't know, give them their authority, I can't remember how you said it, is overcoming the belief that they don't have it in the first place, or they have to acquire it.
Yeah, I said give, yeah.
Which means that you have it and they don't.
Right, I see, yeah. So bring forth their authority, their own authority?
But I think the way that I heard Roger suggest it was, by showing them how they've cut themselves off from it or denied it or something like that, you awaken them to it, but you don't have, in a sense, it's like, because it's a given that it was already there.
Okay.
You're not trying to coax them over to that side. It's like, hey, whoa, it's already there. I just blocked it off? Wow.
If you can understand this, that's the foundation of abiding.
Say that again,
Roger?
Huh? I'm sorry, I can't hear you so well, but it sounded important. You said something about the foundation of abiding?
Everything I say is important.
Well, by all means, please, scooch up to the phone and say it again.
It's not that something I finally said was important.
But it's how you put it with the abiding that I was curious about.
The sound.
So in that you're saying it's not what I do to, and I'm not, let's say, so it's not what I do to become or realize my abiding. It's all the stuff I've done that denied it or gave it away.
Then in trying to cause something, aren't you actually giving it away?
Well, sure you are. You set up the problem and then try to overcome the problem. It's a no-win from both ways. So if I just stop denying my abiding, I guess I've got something there. My hesitation on this is to spend a certain amount of time, trying to understand how to regenerate my body to myself to abiding, regenerate my body to regenerate a self that is abiding.
Yeah, but in that statement, what you're trying to do is cause that.
I totally agree with you, and that is where I've been for the last month or so focused.
And we've constantly told you that it's in living a certain way.
Okay. And if I don't live in that way, am I still abiding?
Well, I want you to tell me what that way is.
Well, for me, it would be always living, expressing, showing, second becoming. Oh, wait, in this case, maybe it would be living, expressing, and never denying second becoming.
What does everybody out there think?
Never doing anything that is not second becoming.
Closer.
That it wouldn't be awakening. Well, see, okay, I have to admit, yeah, I like what you're saying, I can go with this. I've been for quite a while focused on the whole active doing of this. Like that conversation, 3 weeks ago where Roger proposed, you don't pay your bills, if you don't take care of your health, you don't have health, you got to pay your bills. So what makes you think you'll just be taken care of after death? Seems like we have to do something.
And what is that doing? It's the simple statement that we've given you all along.
Never doing anything I wouldn't do forever and ever.
That's one way of saying
it. Why do you go the odd verse instead of...
Oh, because we were talking about not giving people their authority, but showing them how they're denying it or giving it away. We're just trying to follow that.
Then that could lead to some real confusion about doing a whole bunch of not things, never doing this and never doing that.
But the other way around would be helpful, I think.
And the other way is?
Doing only those things that you are proud of and want to do forever and ever.
I would agree with that.
It would at least take the confusion out of it, yeah, of the not things.
Right. My intention is certainly not to confuse anybody. I'm just trying it a different way.
So my question is, does the format of tonight and what we're talking about and how we're talking about it disturb anybody, everybody, nobody?
Or could you
disturb?
Disturb.
I don't understand.
I didn't hear the whole sentence.
Me neither.
I see. Why? What's wrong with that?
They didn't hear you.
I just said
we're going to have to get you a lapel mic, Raj.
You went on to the middle of a sentence and said you didn't hear the whole sentence. Does what we're saying and the way we're saying it and talking about it tonight disturb anybody?
Disturb?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Oh.
Not
no.
No.
Confuse you?
No.
To me, it's helpful.
Why?
Bottom.
What?
Why, he asked.
Why is it helpful?
I see a way to bring me in more.
You've never been excluded.
I know.
That's the same thing that you're doing with your life. You're excluding yourself from your own life.
Oh.
So I didn't change anything or allow anything or do anything different, per se. So what the
hell? It seems a little slower to me tonight.
What?
It seems a little slower to me. So I can ponder more easily what he said. This is for me as a not English speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Mother tongue speaker, I mean.
Yep. You got anything else to say before we end up for tonight?
No.
I got a question.
What? What's your question?
I didn't ask at the beginning. How are you feeling, Roger?
Crappy.
Oh.
My body feels crappy. I don't feel crappy. I feel good.
But the body is kind of crappy, eh? Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's doing its thing.
But it's a whole lot less crappy than it was 2 weeks ago.
Wow, that's tremendous.
Mm-hmm. I can tell.
Next week, we will pick up with the manuscript some more and go ahead with reading more of the manuscript and learning more about these abiding communities, or not. If you write me nasty letters, I probably won't.
Okay.
Who was the author of that manuscript?
It's just a general manuscript that was used by these communities.
Okay.
So it was more like a compilation?
What communities?
Jennifer wants to know what communities.
Abiding communities.
What is that?
What?
What is that?
What is that? Communities of people who live by the authority of themselves, not by the authority of God, essentially.
More before people really got into religion and the concepts of religion.
Mm-hmm.
or before man started trying to show authority over other men.
There was a time?
There actually was.
Actually, I think in the second page where we got them out of order, the communities taught their children to live as each person, to live your own authority, but that no one had authority over any other individual.
Doesn't mean that sometimes there weren't rules in order for the society to function.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't take away their authority. So like if you're raising kids, you're going to have certain rules that you need for everybody to be safe and to do certain things in that family and everything else. But you're not taking the authority away from the child. Is that it, Roger?
In a sense, yeah.
So unless there's any more questions.
So, Misty, good night for now?
It's a good night for now.